CliffCentral.com.
It's good morning, everybody. We're off to a cracking start. It is Monday morning. It's Mandela Day today. We're going to make every day Mandela Day. But today, especially for you, we are in Soweto at the Ikwezi Primary School. Coming to you live. And I see a confused expression on Neil's face. So obviously it's working. All right, we're working. We're here loud and clear. And Mabali Moloi is here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mabs. Good morning, Pashida. Good morning, Ben Karpinski. And good morning to Katlego Moloi, who's also here with us.
Moloi.
Did I say Moloi?
Yes,
sorry,
you
Mabali
did.
Moloi.
Yeah.
Katlego Moloi. Mm. And Michael Flax in the studio in Johannesburg. Everybody's having a happy time, and it's bright and early, and the kids aren't even at school yet, so we haven't yet started to learn. We're sitting in the library, and there are books all around us. It seems like a very cool library. And there is no angry librarian, which is always the case. So maybe she arrives later, and then we'll be chased out of here with whips or sticks or something like that. But
Gareth, there is a Postman Pat doll. That might come to life.
A Postman Pat doll. Now, you know how the Postman Pat song used to go? Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat, and his black and white cat.
Okay.
Don't you remember it?
No, I do not know the song.
You definitely watched Postman Pat.
No, I did not.
Okay.
I was watching Kiddio.
I knew a different song. We used to sing a different one at our school.
Uh-oh.
Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat drove over his cat. All the guts went flying. Postman Pat was crying. He'll just have to buy another cat. So luckily I'm singing that before the kids arrive at school, because I think I'd traumatize them.
Just a little bit.
Well, you traumatized me already.
Absolutely. All right, so we've got a special thing happening here this morning. We are going to, along with Kellogg's, we will be making sure that everybody starts their day with the right amount of healthy nutrition in their stomachs. And you know, you can't learn unless you have food in your stomach. I mean, who could pay attention? If you're hungry, you don't pay attention to anything else except the fact that you're hungry, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Donate your great is the hashtag. You can join us wherever you are in South Africa this morning as part of Mandela Day. And there's lots to talk about with respect to Mandela Day. Everybody's doing their thing. Everybody's spending their 67 minutes doing something useful, something that is sustainable, something that will help this country take a step forward instead of stay where we are. And we all need to take steps forward, right?
That's right.
Correct.
So what did you do this weekend? Anything exciting happen?
Well, I was at Emperor's Palace working during the...
Were you working behind the bar, as usual?
No. Not behind the bar. I was doing the social media for You Magazine, because it was a You Spectacular Awards over this past weekend.
And was it spectacular?
Well, I'll tell you what, Bonang Matheba looked absolutely spectacular in the dress that she wore, which was, of course, by Gert Johan Kutsia. Her and AKA probably picked up half of the entire awards. It is voted for by people, so you know that they're the ones in demand right
these
now.
These are the real... I remember I've got a few You awards, and I was always chuffed when I got these, because it's ordinary people who vote. Mm. It's like the people who actually give a damn about celebrities and what they're doing and, you know, what kind of things they're involved in and the work that they put out every day, every week, every month, whatever it is they do. So if you get voted in these awards... voted for in these awards, then it means people really like you.
No, I mean, it's not like the Oscars where you have just a small group of people who decide who the winners should be.
The Academy.
The Academy.
So I see Marc Bonagni won Sexiest Man.
Sexiest Person. Sexiest Man.
Do they just give that to him every year? Because whenever I go on social media and I see anything about him, it's always sexy something.
Well, you see, the ladies do love Maps. Yes, you know,
they do.
He's got a charming look about him with the glasses going, but then he's also got a great body on him, and he's a nice guy. He's kind of like the full package.
So were there any content, is it like, and the nominees are? Or
Oh, yeah, not sure. You had the nominees, and then the winners were announced on Saturday. So that was a lot of fun.
Did you hand over the award to Mups?
No, I did not.
Have you seen how taken she was by the nominees? Not even one mentioned.
I heard this is what you said when you saw him outside.
They were making you hot.
No? Didn't you?
No, it was not. His lady love was there, Nomsa Mombatha. She is absolutely
How are you?
Ravishing. She is so stunning. So, you know, I couldn't behave that way.
Oh, okay.
Whoa!
Anyway, so well done to Mups. And Bonang and AKA getting awards. That's exciting.
Well, the people love them.
Yeah, they do. And they really are the it couple, even though they're the only two who haven't admitted they're a couple.
they kind of have now. I mean, it's pretty much out there.
Well, what a place to be this weekend, Mubs. I mean, it was star central in South African terms. It is kind of like our Oscars, you know, in some way.
Well,
you could say that. Come on.
Yeah, okay. All right.
You looked very glamorous, I've got to tell you.
Well, you know, I had to up my game.
Go and have a look at Mabali's Twitter timeline. She, of course, resolutely refuses to put anything on Instagram.
Oh, gosh, I'm so bad with Instagram. Yeah. I'm pathetic.
She also puts very little on Facebook. I wouldn't know because she's not my friend on Facebook. I've sent her like 3 friend requests. She won't accept any of them. So full of herself. That's true.
Sorry.
Do you even post things on Facebook anymore?
I mean, I probably haven't in the last 6 months. I'm really bad.
Ben, are you friends with Mavs on Facebook?
Don't think so, no.
No. You, Pashita, no? No, Kat, you're not friends with her on Facebook. No, she's not friends with anyone on Facebook.
Okay, guys.
She uses it as a source for fresh meat.
What?
That's pretty much
it. Okay, all right. We can move on now.
So when you were at the spectacular, I mean, were there any people that we don't know about that we should keep an eye on? Because that's usually where they start bubbling up. I saw Mini Dlamini got 2 awards as well.
Well, she's sexiest woman.
Sure.
Well-deserved.
Well-deserved.
No, look, I mean, you know, all the celebs were there. Sivan Gesi was there, Amanda DuPont, Anne Hirsch was the MC. She's fantastic.
Sivan Gesi did, hang on a second, go just backtrack a little before we get to Amanda DuPont.
Okay.
So, did Sivan Gesi bring his girlfriend Helen Ziller?
No, he did not. He arrived solo for the event.
Oh.
And he was one of the presenters, so he presented an award to someone.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah.
That's terrific news. Well, we have lots to talk about this morning. Ben watched the Open, and he will report back on that. He was so excited about that. He spoke about it the whole way here.
The whole way, yeah. Yeah. It is.
The whole way here. He didn't stop talking. Pashita was not with us in the car, but Kat was, and Kat wanted to kill herself about halfway through the trip because Ben was non-stop talking
about
it.
Well, the only thing that got her through is that, the only thing that got Kat through is that she's not going to be covered in children for the next sort of like 4 hours.
Yeah. She's right in her element.
Now, Kat, let me explain to you. Kat is the producer of Kelman and Cliff Central, among others. She also produces the show that O'Neill does, the OCC, O'Neill and Cliff Central, on a Friday, and so she's usually very busy in the afternoons. Very rare that she should have to be up so early in the morning, and she hated it every step of the way. Right, Kat? Grab that microphone quickly and tell us how you feel. I think a lot of people need to know what it's like, because we're so used to, all of us who take part in this show in the morning, everybody who listens to us at this time of the day, they're all up early, doing things, starting their day early. Kat crawls out of bed at like 7, 8 normally.
Yeah, like half past 8.
So you hated this?
Yeah.
Was it sore?
The last time I was up this early was probably when I was born.
Sure.
Like, I woke up at 3:30. That's ridiculously early.
Yeah, it's crazy. I also got out of bed and thought, what am I doing? What am I doing? There's no way, you know, obviously it's Mandela Day, so we have to make a difference, and we have to try and be useful citizens. And so today, among other things, we'll be painting classrooms. We'll be helping around the Ikwezi Primary School, which, by the way, is not in tourist Soweto. We're not talking about, like, Vilakazi Street, you know, where people go to see Mandela's house and Desmond Tutu's house.
Yes.
And they go to pubs and bars and places that have artisanal food.
Ah, we were at the Kimsies in Soweto.
The Kimsies.
On Saturday. Yeah, no. Yeah. This is not tourist
Soweto. This is the real thing.
Yeah.
We're in Soweto this morning. Like, we almost weren't even sure we were at the right school. We almost went to the Vuguzenzela Primary School, which is like 2 km up the road. Did you also go to the wrong school almost? All right, Pashita, grab that mic and put it with you, because I think we're going to need that from time to time. All right, so you can send us messages. I've got the screen open for WeChat. We can tweet each other this morning. Donate your great is the hashtag as we take part in our Mandela Day today. And it's all with Kellogg's, who are very much involved here at the Ikwezi Primary School, not only in making sure that all the kids here get the nutrition they need to start their day. And who doesn't need a good breakfast? Ben, you know, breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
Oh, yeah. It is. You can't do anything without it. I know I can't do the show without having a big breakfast.
Exactly.
I eat for half an hour prior to this, just so I can be here.
That's kind of the noise.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's it. So your weekend, besides golf?
I don't know. When I close my eyes, I picture the Open. It was that great, Gareth. It really was. It was so special. It was a big golfing week for me last week, and the Stenson winning. I can't even talk properly. It was just too good.
Wow.
Yeah, there was other stuff with other people. I'm sure there was, but it was pretty much the Open.
Well, I was at the Nelson Mandela annual lecture last night in Mamelodi, where we got to hear Bill Gates, the richest man in the whole wide world,
wow,
talking. So you know what? If Bill Gates can take time out of his $70 billion fortune to come and talk to all of us here in South Africa on the eve of Mandela Day, there is no excuse. There's no one who's too good for Mandela Day. And his lecture was all about how we have to live together and how we have to make things work and kind of what the advantages are of being around in 2016. And you know, a lot of the stuff that we've talked about much on this show, there wasn't anything revolutionary in what he said, but he was very much interested in fighting infectious disease. I don't know if you know this, but the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has already poured some $7 or $8 billion into fighting malaria, into wiping out polio. You know, we've almost got polio wiped out. Did you know that?
Oh, wow.
It's amazing. And the only countries that are still holding us back on the polio front are a bunch of lunatic, deeply religious countries in the Middle and Near East. If they can stop their nonsense, we will absolutely destroy polio forever. We won't need the vaccine anymore because no people on Earth will ever get polio again.
Hmm.
We will terminate that virus and all of its evil in one fell swoop. Isn't that great news?
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's progress.
That's major progress. So this is a big deal. And obviously we're very, very proud of being part of Mandela Day today, of having the whole world's focus, their attention focused on us, because it is a day that the whole world can partake in. You might have heard Sello Hatang, who was on with us on Friday. He's the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Foundation. He said that this whole thing started in 2009. That's not even that long ago. With Johannesburg and New York, and now it has spread to 40 countries in the world, and it continues to spread. Without any further ado, let's get straight into the news. Mabali has some of that. It's headline time at 6:15. Here's all the information that you need to start your day and to start your week.
La 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 la. La 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la.
Well, while Cliff Central spends the day in Soweto today for Nelson Mandela Day, let me tell you about what some other organizations and individuals will be up to today.
Right.
We'll begin with the African National Congress in Gauteng, who have announced that its leadership and party veterans are going to embark on a pilgrimage to the Nelson Mandela statue at the Union Building in Pretoria. Oh, no.
A wrong song.
We are not in the fighting spirit. We are not dubulering anyone today. Please, no, that is not what Utata would have wanted. So the purpose of their visit is to form what they call the Nelson Mandela Circle of Unity around the late president's statue. So that's what the ANC will be doing today.
Okay.
Then the F.W. de Klerk Foundation say that their staff members are going to donate their time to two organizations. First, they're going to be doing hands-on projects at Autism Western Cape, and then also at Iris House Children's Hospice. These are organizations that make a meaningful and daily difference in the lives of children with disabilities.
Oh, that's good.
And then the public protector, Tulima Donsela, she's going to lead a team today in Johannesburg who are going to be giving their time to the Uthando Africa Tukun Center in Johannesburg.
Very good.
Their focus is on a cradle-to-career approach This organization focuses on development programs that assists children from disadvantaged backgrounds. So everybody kind of upping their game today and doing whatever they can as part of Nelson Mandela Day.
Very good. So we're all pitching in.
Now, you might have noticed over the weekend that Turkey had a bit of a busy weekend this past weekend, right?
Well, it was just
a little bit busy.
They almost had a change of government, the Turkish.
Wow. They were definitely dominating the headlines on all major news networks. So,
It was just the other day that we checked in with Ben's dad when he was stuck at Istanbul Airport with that terror attack.
Yeah.
And now they almost had a coup. A coup d'etat.
They almost had a coup d'etat, Gareth. According to the government, 161 civilians and regular troops lost their lives when a coup within the army sought to overthrow the authorities. According to the justice minister, they've rounded up about 6,000 people who have now been detained, and they're saying that that number is also likely to rise. They've been busy with those kinds of operations throughout the weekend.
It's quite a big thing they're being rounded up because they're now, guilty of treason.
Well, I suppose.
And treason is quite a big crime to serve now.
Yeah, and according to the president, that crime is not, it's possibly punishable by death.
Exactly.
So it's kind of a big deal. The botched coup bid was the biggest challenge to President Tayyip Erdogan's rule in his 13 years as prime minister and now as president.
This Erdogan sounds like a dodgy guy. I mean, he seems like he's hell-bent on taking over as dictator for life. He wants to set up a family business there by, you know, all intents. And if you've seen the palace he lives in, the guy lives large. He makes Nkandla look really, really sad and depressing. That's how big his palace is. Now, a lot of people are saying that this whole coup was a false flag coup.
What does that mean?
That basically it was made up. It was invented. It was a smokescreen by Erdogan to remove political opponents. So what you do in a situation like this is you tell everybody in the world, oh my God, there's a coup, we've got to take control of our country, the military are rising up against me, and then you take that opportunity to lock up all of the dissenters in your country. So in this case, it would have been a few judges, it would have been some of the generals in the military that he's suspicious of. This is what paranoid dictators do on their rise to power, is they eliminate opposition. And that's precisely what Erdogan seems to have achieved here. And if that's the case, then this is not a coup, then it is a power grab by the sitting president.
If that is in fact true, then it's problematic.
Hugely.
And what do the people of Turkey say? I mean, are they happy with their president? Was he democratically elected?
Look, Turkey has always been the golden boy of the Middle East, and it's not really even in the Middle East because Turkey is part of the EU. And it's got this funny relationship with the EU where it's in, but it's not really in. They're obviously the launch pad for a number of refugees. They border on Syria, which is how Europe borders in Syria. And Turkey is famous for being a secular state. You know, when the Ottoman Empire, which was the empire that joined the Germans in World War I, fell, the Ottoman Empire was a very powerful empire in the Middle East. They pretty much had control of much of the Muslim world at that stage. When they fell, and the Muslim Ottoman Empire was taken to pieces, a guy called Mohammed Atatürk took over in Turkey, hence the name Turkey. And Atatürk was a secularist, and he was a military man, but he was also a bit of a visionary, and he set up modern secular Turkey, which really began to thrive fairly soon after all the silly old rules were abolished. And for a long time, Turkey was a stable place. Turkey was not necessarily a free, open society, because in those days very little was free and open, but certainly it had made progress. And then the heirs to Atatürk were the eventual governments of the country that we would nominally call Democratic Turkey. Places like Istanbul began to thrive. We had a stable economy. We had very little of the theocratic tendencies of many other countries in the Middle East. But ultimately now we've got Erdogan, who seems to me to be taking things backwards. And Turkey will no longer be the golden boy of that part of the world. It certainly isn't already, you could say. And they're a troublemaking country there. They make trouble with the Kurds in Iraq. They make trouble with what's going on in Syria. With Bashar al-Assad, who's the leader of Syria, And they have complicated relationships with Israel and Egypt. It's just a very, very complex situation. There's no way to make it sound like things are under control there, even if Erdogan tries to persuade us. So it's messy.
Yeah, well, according to Turkish authorities, they've made it clear that they're going to show no mercy in the wake of the coup. So, you know, these 6,000 people that have been rounded up, it doesn't look like they're going to, you know, escape from this lightly. The president also accused the plotters of acting on behalf of Erdogan's arch enemy. This is a guy who's based in the U.S., Fethullah Gulen, who's a preacher, who President Erdogan is now insisting that the U.S. must send this guy back over to Turkey because he's accusing him of being the person behind the entire operation.
Well, what do you think he's doing in the U.S.? Obviously, he's not safe if he's in Turkey.
No, he's not.
Can you imagine if Musi Maimane had to flee to the U.S. in order to fight these elections? So clearly, what's going on there is bad. It's bad for democracy. It's bad for a free, open society. And I don't know whether this was as Machiavellian as people make it sound with respect to Erdogan, but if it is, then he is a bad man.
Definitely.
And someone somewhere needs to take care of him. It's not going to be South Africa. We don't have an army to send.
No, he's a bad man with some very dangerous ideas, if this theory is true.
Exactly.
And then over in the United States, Gareth, I suppose, you know, a spotlight is going to be put on these incidents going forward because, you know, they're just highlighting an even bigger problem that the Americans are struggling to deal with. Another shooting involving police officers being targeted. A Missouri man ambushed and killed three law enforcement officers and wounded three others. And this all happened in Baton Rouge on Sunday. During a time when police nationwide and in the Louisiana city in particular had been on high alert after five officers were killed in Dallas is it last week or the week before?
Yeah, it was last week.
The person behind the shooting, the gunman, he was shot and killed himself.
No, sorry, it was the Friday before. Yeah, I'm just trying to think back because we've had so many of these incidents lately. So messy.
A man identified as Gavin Long of Kansas City went on a shooting rampage on his 29th birthday. He's also an army guy. He's a veteran. So and this was the case with the first shooter, wasn't it? Was that he's also a war veteran? You know, again, just that theory of how these guys go over to fight wars and then they come back all broken and damaged. And you know, when you have somebody who's, you know, mentally not 100% there, I suppose it's easier for them to act out, you know, acts of this nature. So yeah, he was a former Marine who spent time in Iraq. He was discharged at the rank of sergeant back in 2010. And then on Sunday he decided to arm himself and killed two officers and a sheriff, wounded three others before he himself was gunned down. America and its problems getting worse and worse, it would seem.
Yeah, and America and its problems are not being solved anytime soon. So we just brace yourself. There's going to be a little bit more of this, unfortunately. Horrible.
Now, if Donald Trump is to be America's next president, their vice president would be one Mike Pence, governor, who Trump basically,
this?
I don't know anything about this guy. He's 57 years old.
So he's very young.
Yes, Ben. He's young for politics. He served in Congress and as the chairman of the House Republican Conference. Trump has spoken very highly of this guy. Basically, he wasn't shy to say that one of the big reasons that he chose this Mike Pence was for the party's sake. So it's all about party unity, which to me, I don't know, like, does this mean that he wasn't necessarily his first choice? He was kind of sort of made to choose this guy. I don't know. But that's who the vice president of the United States would be if it were, in fact, to be won by Trump. Mike Pence.
Yeah. I don't know anything about this guy.
Neither do I.
It seems like Hillary's campaign are already saying that he's a bad dude, as they have to.
As they have to, yeah.
But
you can't be complimentary of the opposition. That's not how that game works.
No, absolutely.
And then, of course,
okay,
we
Donald.
Have Crooked Hillary.
Yes.
Crooked Hillary, fuck.
Yeah. Right. Well, Crooked Hillary has not yet told us who she's going to run with.
No, she has not. We're kind of waiting.
She's so crooked, is she?
Yeah.
That she won't tell us who.
Bernie.
No, it's not going to be Bernie.
No, but really, I mean, so again, what was that whole point of Bernie coming out and endorsing Hillary, and you know, they're making a whole public spectacle of it? I mean, why do that? What's the point?
I suppose it's got to do with Bernie's supporters being channeled into Hillary's campaign. I mean, she just wants all the people who would have voted for Bernie, because it's quite a groundswell. And it's a lot of young people, and it's a lot of people who want some change. And those are not necessarily people who agree with or would side with Hillary normally. But we will have to see. But this Mike Pence, here's what we know about him. Republican governor of Indiana since 2013. He has been in politics much of his life. Let me see what else I can find. There's MikePence.com, where you can go and read all about him. Obviously, this is from his point of view, so it's going to be nice. Trump, Make America Great Again, is the first thing you see on his site, and then you have to click a box that says, I am not a robot.
Oh.
Then he'll let you have a look at what he's all about. It's a very exciting time, he says. For America, your voice represents a bright new future for our great nation, full of more opportunities for everyone, not just a select few, like Donald Trump and the other billionaires. He doesn't say that, but that's what I'm reading into it. And you can donate to them if you really like Mike Pence, but I wouldn't donate to someone I don't know. Forgive me. Call me old-fashioned.
Old-fashioned.
But I'm not in a hurry to donate too much to him. Anyway, he is a politician. He's been an attorney. He previously represented Indiana in Congress as well. And Donald Trump has obviously chosen this dude out of everybody. He's got quite a history in Congress. In the House of Representatives. He has been on the various committees for agriculture, the judiciary, small business, and he belongs to the Tea Party caucus, which means he's probably a raving lunatic.
Yeah.
Exciting times for Donald Trump and his campaign.
But Donald always said that he'll always have the best man for the job.
Yeah. Because he's a businessman. Is this the best man?
So he must be the best man.
Yeah. We just have to take his word for it. All right. Very good. What else is going on in the news?
Well, that's it, Gareth. 6:30, so
it's time for Ben. Let's cross over to Ben and get the sport from him immediately. Ben has lots to talk about, not just golf, this morning. So, Ben Karpinski, what do you have for us today?
Well, I was going to go with 15 minutes of golf, Gareth, but then I realized perhaps there's other things too.
Nah,
let's start with our Olympic countdown, right?
All right.
18 days until the Olympics starts in Rio.
Wow.
Troubled Rio. So let's take a bit of a different approach. And let's work out what the Olympics is really all about. It's about banging.
What do you mean?
Well, in the Sochi Olympic Games, right, the Winter Games, mm-hmm. What was the number one app used at the Olympics?
Tinder.
Yes, well done.
Really?
It was Tinder, because they were just so keen to bang, these athletes. All they were doing for, yeah, the medals are good and well, you can tell your grandkids, that kind of stuff, but they're essentially banging. So much so that 450,000 condoms are available to the athletes, so that breaks down as 350,000 male condoms, 100,000 female condoms, 175,000 packets of lubricant. I'll tell you what, there is four athletes who are not going to be involved in this, and they are the four women from Saudi Arabia.
Oh.
Yes, Saudi Arabia are sending four women.
Are they going to be clad in hijabs for the entire game?
Of course, Gareth. They won't be diving, because you can't see their urats.
No.
There'll be no urat showing here, so no diving, no gymnastics. But they will be under heavy male supervision, as you would imagine.
Of course.
They'll be chaperoned throughout. But it's a big step, this, because there was two Saudi women in the last Olympics. There are now four. So that is a good percentage of increase there.
That's a double.
Yeah.
But is it just these four being sent over to Saudi Arabia, or is it just four women of the entire team?
Four women of the Saudi Arabia team. There's seven men, I think.
Yeah.
So they're going over there. And,
well, not known as the capital of world athletics, Riyadh, you know?
No.
When you think of great athletes, you don't think of Saudi Arabia. In fact, do they have to wear their outfits? Do they wear normal athletic kit like everyone else, the men?
I think they do. The men do, yeah.
Oh.
The men are all there, but the women...
So easy for men.
And, of course, they weren't announced with the men. It was a separate ceremony because they can't be announced at the same time.
No. Well, they're not equal.
No. No.
Yeah, and despite everyone's protestations that they are equal, they seem to go to a lot of trouble to separate them out.
Yeah, so if you're looking for some real outsiders and you want to be a neutral at the Olympics, well, cheer for these Saudi women.
Okay.
You won't miss them, trust me.
I'll cheer for them.
Yeah, me too. In rugby, it was the final match of the Craven Week over the weekend, so the best two teams throughout were Western Province and the Lions. They clearly were the best two teams, and they created a pretty good final too, which Western Province won 27-20. So there's no real secret why Western Province are always so good at Craven Week. They've got the best school structure. These guys are playing strength versus strength pretty much the entire weekend. When you think of the strong schools that make up this team, they really do have an unfair advantage over all the other provinces in the country. But good on the rest of the teams. There were some amazing matches, some incredible talent being unearthed here. And I just hope I hope the French clubs didn't sign too many of them, and a lot of them will be retained in local provinces. Super Rugby, well, what an exciting weekend that was. There were so many different permutations going into the weekend of who was going to play who in the quarters, who was going to top the log, but they were all kind of thrown in their head, all because the Hurricanes did so bloody well. Now, firstly, the Friday matches, Blues 34-28 over the Waratahs, so even New Zealand's worst team can still beat the best the Aussies have. The Reds, that was a boring match. 28-31, the Rebels. The Sharks beat the Sunwolves 40-29, so they guaranteed their spot at 8th, so therefore they would make the quarterfinals. On to Saturday then, and the first two matches of Saturday were to decide everything. Crusaders host the Hurricanes, but the Hurricanes walloped them 35-10, which meant they went to the top of the log temporarily. All the Chiefs had to do was then win their match against the Highlanders. They failed to do so. Highlanders winning that one 25-15. Which then left the Lions having to beat the Jaguars. But of course they sent a B team to the Jaguars match, and they lost that one 34-22. So the Hurricanes literally came out of nowhere. They were looking like they were going to finish 7th, 6th, maybe even 8th. But they finished top. The whole ranking system of course is very stupid and skewed, so it's not even worth explaining. The important thing to explain here is this is what the quarterfinals are going to look like. We have finishing top, the Hurricanes. They will take on the Sharks, which is the worst team going to the quarterfinals. Absolute walkover for them there. That's 9:35 Saturday. The first match, however, will be Friday. Brumbies versus the Highlanders. Now, the Brumbies will host the Highlanders because they were the top Australian team, even though they were 9 points behind the Highlanders in actual regulation play. Right. That'll be Friday, 10 o'clock. The Lions will then take on the Crusaders. So the Lions had a chance to finish top, and if they did get it finished top, they would have played the Sharks. But Johan Ackermann, and I still back him on this call, wants to rest his first-choice team so they'll be well-prepared for this quarterfinals. So they'll take on Crusaders at 4:30 on Saturday without the Man Mountain wing Ndolo. He is not coming out for the Crusaders, so that's a big deal. Crusaders did beat the Lions in regulation play at Ellis Park, so lots to be learned from that match, and I still think it's a good call. The Lions will win this match. I really do feel it's going to be the way. The Stormers, well, there's all kinds of people in Cape Town that can finally now wear their all-black jerseys to Newlands because the Chiefs are coming. There hasn't been a New Zealand team at Newlands all season, which has been terrible, disappointing news for local fans. You know, they love the All Blacks down there. So at 7 o'clock Saturday, that'll be that match. Can't see the Stormers winning that one. They just haven't got what the Chiefs will bring to the party there. So people are already saying all doom and gloom, oh, New Zealand teams are going to win, it'll be all New Zealand semis. And it wouldn't be the worst thing if they haven't, because they are just a head and shoulders above everyone else. But I still believe the Lions have a lot to prove here, and they will win that match. But we'll get into that closer to the weekend, as you see the teams being announced. We must get into the golf, and what an incredible weekend it was. It's difficult to kind of get too excited about sport where you literally cannot. People always say, I was glued to the TV, but they weren't really. They were on their phone, they were drinking beers, they were doing other things. I seriously watched every single shot that Henrik Stenson hit yesterday. The guy is incredible. He really is a superstar. It is his first major triumph. Now, he is 40 years old. He has been a top 10 player in the world. He's won many, many, many big tournaments, but never a major. And the weird thing about this Open is that it's always really, really open, but the weather does play a big role. Now, Stenson and Mickelson had the best of the weather in the first two rounds. They went out where it wasn't pissing with rain, and the wind wasn't too bad. So they were the two sort of leaders halfway through. But literally from the start of Saturday, it was a two-horse race. The rest of the field were absolutely nowhere. No matter what they tried, they could not get birdies. They could not stay level with the back nine. These two, they were playing a different golf course. Mm-hmm. Henrik Stenson, then, in the final round, he was one ahead. Just one ahead of Phil Mickelson. Mickelson birdied the first hole. Stenson made bogey. Suddenly, there was a two-shot swing right from the off. Mickelson had a pretty much faultless 65 in the final round, which would have won anything, really.
Right.
Mickelson's score yesterday, he finished on minus 17, right? That was one of the lowest opens or major scores of all time. His score yesterday would have been good enough to win 140 out of the 145 opens played. That is how good he was. but he still lost by 3 shots. So what makes Henrik Stenson's last round so incredible. 6 pars, 2 bogeys, 10 birdies. Now, this is the last round. This is where the pins are in the most difficult positions. It is the hardest round to ever get a run on. He shot 63, which is the joint lowest round in a major championship. That's what Mickelson had in the first round. 20 under. Now, that is the lowest ever open total. So, name every single great of the game before. Nicholas, Player, Woods, Player. Everyone. Everyone. Henrik Stenson just trumped all of them at the Open Championship. Minus 20 is the tied lowest major score of all times to go with Jason Day's USPGA triumph last year. And I just can't say enough about this guy. He was it was birdie for birdie. The bettable score between Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson. So if you took the best score that both of them had throughout the round, 59 was their total. They broke 60 together yesterday. It really was. It was two tournaments. Stenson was more under par yesterday than third place was for the entire tournament. It's just...
Gee.
I don't think we'll see another tournament like this in our lifetime. It was really that good. And it was just so great to be a part of it. So there it was. JP Holmes was -6. He was third place. Henrik Stenson, -20.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely incredible. The American run at Troon has now come to an end. The Americans did make a bit of a challenge there, but... Henrik Stenson, what an incredible player. Charles Watzel was the best SA-placed player. He was even par, just a mere 20 shots back from Henrik Stenson. 20.
Amazing.
20 shots. 63 in the final round. Again, we'll be looking at this for years to come. The next major will be at Baltus Roll. That is the USPGA Championship from July 28th, and that'll be just before the Olympics. So all the big names going into that. In cycling, Chris Froome still leads the French Open. Sorry, Tour de France.
French Open, Tour de France, potato, potato, right? Yeah.
Big cycle race. And the final big story from the weekend was the cricket. Now, we all know Pakistan have had their troubles, right? So much so they've had to employ Mickey Arthur because no one else would want to coach these guys. It's like herding cats for the best of times. There's so much talent here, but you've got the match fixing. You've got the fact that the Misbah Haq is about 73 years old. He'll never
terror
retire.
Terror attacks.
Exactly. People won't tour the country. They play all their home games in the UAE. These guys are just a horror story from start to finish. Nothing is easy with Pakistan cricket. But the fact is, they can go to a place like Lord's and beat England there. It just makes sport okay again. Whether you love Pakistan or hate them, I think they're so great for the game. And they won by 75 runs yesterday. They won the game with a dead spare. Shah, their leg spinner, 10 wickets. And Misbah with that beautiful 100 in the first innings. I think I told you last week, he's 42.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's 42 years old. He's still current. He's still relevant.
Taking
he's still
sides.
Dominating in the game. And you've got to think, England, well, people always make a big deal about the fact that the bowlers do this and that, but their batsmen just aren't good enough. If those gingers don't fire, it doesn't work. And Stokes is out anyway, so they're just relying so much on Bairstow to score 100 nowadays, and when it doesn't happen, they're screwed. Pakistan's totals weren't exactly huge. They scored 339 and 215, but they still won the Test match by 75 runs. What an incredible series we have ahead of us here, that the Pakistanis get the 1-0 advantage. Now, England, you know, they've had a good run. They've had decent form. But I just think that their opponents at home have been, well, kind of terrible if you look at a team like Sri Lanka. So now Pakistan are really sticking it to them, and this is going to be enthralling from start to finish. That's pretty much it from your weekend wrap-up.
We are coming to you live this morning from Ikwezi Primary School, which is in Soweto. I was just looking at the map now. We're pretty much between Meadowlands in the north, Pimville in the south, Dobsonville on the west, and Orlando on the east. So we're in the middle of Soweto, right in the middle. Ikwezi Primary School is just a little school. We're going to send Peshida out in a moment. You're going to go and tell us what's happening out there, right? Whether the kids have arrived yet and what's going on.
Sounds like they have.
Yeah, it sounds like there's some activity going on there.
Yes, I'm going to be the field reporter.
That's right, our field reporter. Donate Your Great is what we're doing. That's the hashtag this morning on social media. We're doing this with Kellogg's, who are doing their bit for Mandela Day by feeding and making sure that the kids here at Ikwezi Primary School start their day right. And who doesn't know how important breakfast is as the first meal of the day? And you can't learn on an empty stomach. So this is as good a day as any for us to all start to look after these things. Right, Mubs?
Absolutely.
All right. Damn straight. Now, let's go to Anthea Gardner and see what's happening in the money. Everybody needs to know what's happening with their money. And today is no different. Here's Anthea's song. That's right. And There she is. Good morning, Anthea.
Good morning, Gareth.
How are you this morning?
Fine, thanks. How's
Excellent.
The weather?
It's fantastic. It's not exactly warm, but that is not the biggest problem in the world. There are people who have much bigger problems than us. And to be fair, the sun has come up. It's sort of a little bit of a foggy, hazy morning here at the moment. But we can just see it's starting to get light outside. So we're in the depths of winter. We're in the middle of Soweto, and it is Mandela Day. I actually think it's entirely appropriate. What do you have for us in terms of news in the markets today?
So we had another positive day on the market on Friday. The all share was up 0.5%, mostly on the back of the good Chinese GDP growth number I told you about on Friday. Although we didn't see the same follow through in Europe, where the markets were down between, say, 20 basis points to 0.5%. In the U.S., kind of the markets ended flat, but they bounced around a bit. They released their U.S. retail sales number, which came in better than expected. So we're seeing a bit of inflationary pressure manifesting in the U.S., which for us sounds like a bad thing as South Africans, because we're always trying to contain inflation in our country. But for them, it's actually a good thing. Some inflation in an economy is actually good. And despite quantitative easing and free cash, the one thing that the U.S. hasn't managed to get right is, in fact, their target of 2% inflation. They're sitting on about 1.2% at the moment. Let me give it some perspective. In 2008, before the GFC, yeah, inflation in the U.S. was around 5%. And then in 2009, it fell all the way down to minus 2%. Which just shows that there was after the GFC, there was a lack of demand in the economy for goods and services, which subsequently led to unemployment because no one's buying anything, or no one's buying what you're selling.
Right.
So inevitably you have to cut your workforce. I wasn't actually planning to talk about that. Let me finish with the local market. I might come back to that. Though.
Before you get into like rounding off, you said it was mostly a good day on Friday. Obviously, with the news coming out of Turkey, this is going to have a negative effect on markets, right? We don't like instability.
Definitely, and especially for emerging markets. So Turkey, it was the good of the emerging markets. You know, so if you look at the basket, so the big ones are Brazil, and we know that's terrible. Russia's had such trouble, and then Turkey was kind of seen as the good emerging market, and now with the attempted coup, it's not going to be good for us. In fact, the rand on Friday evening, or kind of over the weekend, fell about 3%. You know, we went from, we were about trading at about 14.30. We went all the way to 14, weakened all the way to 14.60 to the dollar. But this morning we've come back to 14.37 again. The Turkish lira has probably suffered the most. It weakened by about 6-7% on Friday. It was trading at 2.89, went all the way to 3.04. But I see it's back below 3 against the dollar now. So
okay,
just very volatile.
All right, well, that's bound to happen whenever you have this kind of instability. But there's other news to talk about, and you did want to wrap it up with our markets. So let's just go back to that for a second.
Okay. So on Friday, retailers were the standout performers on our market, mostly because, like Woolworths the day before, Truworths released their sales figures for the 52 weeks to June, another incredible set of results, especially considering what's happening. So group sales for Truworths, and this includes their office, so the UK shoe retailer, Naughty and Earthchild, which are the local brands, increased by 46%. So group sales up 46%. So what we want to do, though, is compare like-for-like numbers. So if you strip the recent acquisitions out, it was sales growth for the year was 11.3%, slightly below what the market was expecting, but actually another set of double-digit growth numbers in a retail company, I think that's a pretty good achievement in this environment.
Not bad.
The share was up 3.5% on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I must say, I do struggle to hold local retail shares in my portfolio in this kind of environment. And as you know, from Friday, Woolworths is probably my top pick, along with the Foschini Group. Woolworths was up 2.7% on Friday. Foschini gained about 2%. So, yeah, retailers really very resilient, holding their own, very surprising.
All right, well, I mean, you talk about that, but surely one of the things we know for sure is that people still need to buy food, they still need to buy clothes. It doesn't matter how good or bad the rest of the economy is looking. Those kinds of retailers, if you choose the right one, you could end up okay, more than okay.
Sure. And what's happening in our local economy is that the retailers, the food retailers in particular, have tended not to pass on the the big inflation numbers, you know, the kind of meat inflation that's sitting well in the teens. And so the problem there is that even though they're holding on to market share, their margins are actually under pressure. So even though people still have to shop for food, if a company's margins are under pressure, then it doesn't really make sense that the share price will continue rising.
Okay.
It's a bit of a double-edged sword, that one.
Talk to me about Richemont.
Okay. Now, there's a retailer, if you want to call it that, that hasn't done so well. I guess they're not in the same league as our local retailers, but they were the worst-performing stock in the top 40 index on Friday.
Sure.
And you'd think for a luxury goods company, it should be more resilient when you're worried about global growth. But actually what happened on Friday was that Swatch, the watchmaker, Swiss watchmaker, mm-hmm. put out a terrible trading statement. So for the first half of their financial year, Swatch are expecting net sales to be down by 12%, which translates into profits falling between 35 and 45% below consensus expectations. So the big markets that are under pressure for Swatch are Hong Kong and some of Europe, mostly France and Switzerland at the moment. So I'm surmising a bit here because I haven't seen the tourism numbers, but it seems that the most obvious explanation for the France-Switzerland kind of decline in market is really terrorism in France and the stronger Swiss franc in Switzerland, obviously. And I think they depend a lot on Chinese shoppers. And I think Chinese shoppers are just staying away from these countries because that's not kind of so obviously the terrorism they're worried about, and the Swiss franc doesn't work for them when they translate their renminbi or yuan.
But this is obviously just a luxury goods problem at the moment too. I mean, I'd imagine all the other luxury goods manufacturers and retailers are also suffering. Who's buying expensive watches in this economy?
Well, so I think the higher LSM groups do tend to be more resilient. Okay. And so they do continue shopping, and they don't feel the pressure as much as your lower or middle LSM. I mean, Richemont, it's a stock I like. I think I'll stay away from it a bit longer, though. I sold it kind of in the high 90s. It's now trading at about 84 Rand a share. It hasn't fallen quite as much as I expected, but I'd like to see a turnaround in these global luxury or watch sales numbers before I get back into it.
Okay, let's talk about gold, because I know you don't believe in investing in gold. You think it's a silly safe haven, but a lot of people run to it for sentimental reasons, and they believe that, you know, if the world apocalypse comes, that the only thing of value will be gold. So when nervous people get even more nervous, they tend to buy a lot of it. What's the current situation with gold?
Okay, so it's kind of hovering around the $1,329 an ounce level. And this is actually what I was referring to earlier when I was talking about the U.S. And, you know, the central banks, it feels as if they want to help global growth, but they really are stuck for what to do. I mean, they keep pumping cash into the system. They keep quantitative easing. They've got interest rates as ammunition, but they're running out because interest rates are so much lower and have been for so long now. It's kind of, what else can they do, right? So the concern is how else do you stimulate global growth? Now, of course, I've previously mentioned that the investor community is very nervous about Trump winning the elections. And I think as we get closer to the U.S. election, I do think investors are going to look to safe havens. And, of course, you know, gold is kind of where they run to.
So hang on, is this Anthea Gardner saying gold might be something worth buying?
I never thought you'd hear me say that, did you?
So you are saying it.
I think so, Gareth. I think, so you know, in South Africa, you can't really find dollar-denominated gold exposure. If you're going to buy an ETF, it has to be rand, or it is rand-denominated. And there's no harm in hedging your portfolio. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say we add about 5% to our portfolio, okay?
Right.
I'm inclined to think that if I'm going to do that, I would rather go for the highly leveraged, sort of safer gold shares. And in that case, Pan African Resources, Sibanye Gold, Anglo Gold would probably be my top picks.
All right.
So in this case, if gold rallies, these shares like Anglo Gold, Pan African, their profitability increases at a higher
Do mention Sibanye every time, please, because they are a sponsor of the Leadership Platform. So we do give them the greatest share of our kudos.
Well, not only that, but Neil Froneman does seem to have an incredible strength of character. I don't know what braveness about him. A knack.
And he has a knack for buying up other people's minds and making them work.
Exactly. So it's not just because they're sponsors of Cliff Central.
Yes.
I do actually think it's a very good stock to own.
All right, there we go. So you're completely objective about that. You don't need me telling you what to think or say. Just finally, Oak Bay Resources. Now, this is the Gupta business, right?
That's right. So the news broke this weekend that the JSE might force them to delist. They only listed in 2014, at the end of 2014. And it doesn't really trade that much. It's not a huge volume share. But what's happening here is that every company that is listed on the JSE needs a sponsor. So they need a company to ensure that they follow the rules or the reporting. They submit financials on time. They put out SENS announcements. SENS stands for Stock Exchange News Services, in line with regulation. So Sasfin was the sponsor for Oak Bay, but they've withdrawn their services. And
what does
Oak
that
Bay
mean? Sponsor means you don't have to actually help them out financially. You just have to. It's almost like if you're a club, you get nominated and someone seconds you.
Yes. Or it's like being an auditor. You know, they're just part of the financial regulations.
Okay.
You need a third party independent.
And they won't do that anymore for Oak Bay.
That's right. And Oak Bay haven't managed to find a new sponsor in the 30-day period that is required.
Hmm.
So it looks like they may delist. Yeah, kind of. I tell you what's interesting is Oak Bay do have new auditors, and their bankers are an Indian state-owned bank called Baroda or something.
All right.
Yeah, they won't be the first company to delist from the JSE. But, you know, it's never a good thing.
All right. SAA do not currently have a CEO or a COO. All the decisions seem to be made by the chairperson, Dudu Mieni, who, of course, used to be the president's girlfriend, or still is, we don't know. She's certainly the president of the Jacob Zuma Foundation. But for the moment, what's happening at SAA?
So financially this is a bit messy as well. I mean, it's not just a personnel issue. They've had to put their capital restructuring on hold. And my understanding of this situation is that they needed money for a large loan repayment that was due at the end of June. They appointed a company called BNP Capital as the advisors for the capital raise and the restructure. But nobody actually knows this company called BNP Capital, and it's got nothing to do with BNP Paribas, the big French international bank. The thing we know is that it is headed up by an ex-PIC and National Empowerment Fund official, and so there have been lots of objections to the tender process and how this BNP Capital was appointed. And then, of course, so I think it was 256 million rand in fees that was going to be awarded to the financial advisor, so this BNP Capital, basically. So at the moment, SAA is really being sustained by state guarantees, currently around 14.5 billion rand. They've asked National Treasury for an additional 5 billion rand. And then, of course, last week, Pravin Gordhan asked Parliament to postpone the release of SAA's reports until September. This is the fourth time this has happened. Because Treasury are now considering whether or not they're going to extend their guarantees. It's just not a viable financial position.
Sounds like the Eskom and SABC story all over again. It just seems we cannot find good enough people to run parastatals in this country, because it's all down to how it's run.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, all three of these businesses, whether it's Eskom, SABC, or SAA, should be extraordinarily powerful, influential, and very, very profitable. They are none of those things.
Mm.
And it's all because they're run badly by bad people who don't know how to run businesses.
If you've got such a huge monopoly on something, you'd think you'd be able
You should be able to pitch up at work and the wheels are just turning.
Mm.
Obviously, you've got people who are so incompetent, they've actually jammed things in the spokes of the wheels. It's unbelievable.
Very messy.
All right, thank you, Anthea. Last thing is the MPC rate decision on Thursday. What are you expecting?
So we've got our CPI inflation on Wednesday before that, and that will really decide it.
Mm-hmm.
I think inflation will probably stay around the 6% level or maybe hopefully even lower, which means that the MPC aren't under that much pressure to raise. So even though they've said they're in an interest rate raising cycle, I think they'll keep the interest rate stable or at the same level on Thursday. It'll be about rhetoric. It'll be about what they say going forward, whether or not we're still in an interest rate rising environment,
okay,
or whether they're kind of going to hold back a bit, considering what's happening globally.
All right. We've run out of time for this morning, but there are two questions that people have asked. Maybe we can answer these at some point during this week. Spear says, Anthea, what are bond notes? So if we can look at that through the course of this week. And Kevin says, Gareth, just for interest's sake, why don't we buy other minerals? So can we look at what other minerals, not just gold, are possibly good buys?
Oh, absolutely. Right. That's a decent discussion. So let's do it tomorrow.
Fantastic. Thank you, Anthea. Anthea Gardner.
Pleasure. Have a good Mandela Day.
Thank you, and you too. Anthea Gardner, it's Mandela Day. Quite right of her to point that out. We're at Ikwezi Primary School. I know that we haven't done anything yet in terms of talking to all the people that are outside. The kids are starting to arrive at school. Pashita's going to head out with her mic in a moment or two, and we'll see who we can meet. But we're doing it with Kellogg's. It's hashtag Donate Your Grape this morning. We'll be feeding the kids. We'll be taking part in a whole bunch of activities around the school for Mandela Day, including painting classrooms and lots of other exciting things. So, Mabali, Ben, Pashida, Katleho from Kelman and Cliff Central, all the team are here, and we're all taking part in some very, very exciting things for Mandela Day. It's all happening live in Soweto this morning. You can join us on WeChat. You can message us just like Graham has. He said, what exactly are the ANC giving back by marching to the Mandela statue at the Union Buildings? No donations, no time spent helping others who need it. It sounds like an election campaign to me.
Okay.
Thank you, Graham. Graham's very cynical, by the way.
Yeah, look.
Probably rightly so.
Yeah, I mean, people are going to be harder than normal, towards the ruling party. That's just the way it is.
And a shout-out to the team from New York City. Thanks for such a solid show. You make me feel that being away from South Africa is easy. Shout-out to all the family and friends back home. Best regards from Chris Tingle in New York City. And Kevin wants to know, was the Bill Gates presentation recorded and can we see it online somewhere? I'm sure it's on the Nelson Mandela Foundation's website, and you can find it there. If you don't find it there, it was streaming live on YouTube last night, but I'm sure they've got an archive of that somewhere too. The Nelson Mandela annual lecture last night was Bill Gates in Mamelodi, and I was there along with Selo Hatang from the Nelson Mandela Foundation, who of course will be very busy today for Mandela Day. All around the country, everybody is doing their thing, and we're doing ours with Kellogg's at Ikwezi Primary School. Hashtag donate your great. Are you ready to get the morning started properly?
Yes, let's do it.
All right. The song was chosen by Katleho. I always trust her to choose the right music, and she's decided we need something to lift our spirits on a cold Monday morning. So, Coolin' the Gang, baby. Old school.
CliffCentral.com.